Since 2003, the online portal China Digital Times has been tracking the development of the internet in China and aggregating content that has been censored or blocked in Chinese cyberspace. By examining online discussions of China's politics, economy, society, and culture, China Digital Times provides analysis, commentary, and translations that aim to place all of this into a broader social and political context. In this week's Asia Digital Life podcast, I talk with Anne Hanakowitz, translations editor at China Digital Times. Although the organization was founded in Berkeley, California, and is still based there, its large team of editors contribute from across the globe, and Anne spoke to me from her home in Washington, D.C. Anne, thanks for joining us. You're the translations editor for China Digital Times. Maybe you can start by telling us just what that means.
So I oversee our translations projects. We have a lot of daily tasks following not just the news that's happening in China, but how people on the internet in China, what we call and many people call netizens or wangmin, how they're reacting to political and social events. And we also monitor censorship of both the media and the internet in China. So you'll see a series of different posts every week from translations of Weibo posts that have been deleted to keywords that are blocked on Weibo search results, and also propaganda directives that have been leaked that give instructions to internet companies and media organizations, not really so much on what not to report, but how to report things, to what degree, and whether they should be using the official Xinhua news copy, Xinhua being the state-run wire service. So we do a range of activity, but we're really focused on those two aspects, looking at censorship and also resistance to that censorship.
So a lot of what you're monitoring is China's version of Twitter, Weibo there. Could you tell us a little bit about, you know, how they use that? We understand, I think most of the readers here understand that Weibo has been really popular for about since 2009 or so, since right after Twitter was blocked in China. And for a brief time there, it was getting a whole lot of discussion internationally as being something that could possibly, you know, really open up China's public sphere and enable all of this conversation online. Late last year, China began sort of cracking down on Weibo and what they call the big Vs, the big popular people who have millions and millions of followers, in an effort to, what they say, quell and quash rumors online. There's still a lot of activity on Weibo, isn't there, though?
There is. So to talk briefly about what Weibo is, I think that the trends on it are very important, but it's also important to understand that it's not exactly analogous to Twitter. If you can imagine Twitter and Facebook combined, then that's a more accurate depiction, because yes, you have the 140 character posts, but video and photos are embedded in a way that they are still not even on Twitter. You know, you have to click that extra link or image to see the full image. So it's a lot easier to share multimedia, and people even create polls. They can create discussion pages. So it has a lot of different functionality that makes it a real, at least until this recent crackdown over the past year, has made it a real gathering place for people, of a public square online for netizens.
Yeah, I think it's also important to mention that 140 characters in Chinese and Mandarin in Mandarin is much more content than 140 characters in English or many other languages, right?
That's true. So the way that the Chinese writing system works is that every character corresponds to one syllable, and most words in Chinese are one or two syllables long. So rather than imagine the English word enough, and that's E-N-O-U-G-H. Okay, so that, wait, E-N-O-U-G-H. Right.
Right.
Just making sure that I counted correctly. That's six characters for a two-syllable word, which would be, in Chinese, if you say something's enough, it's gola. Okay, so that's also two syllables, but it's only two characters. So you're right. You can actually say a lot more in one post on Weibo than you can on Twitter. Another neat tool that people have been using for years on Weibo is what they call long Weibo, where you create an image of text. So once again, you don't really have to do any extra clicking. You see someone's post and they might write a little intro that's in text, but you can have an entire long essay that just pops right up.
And many Chinese often use this as sort of a subversive way to circumvent censorship of specific words that the censors would be looking out by embedding those words, for example, in an image, right?
Yes, I personally haven't been tracking that as much, but you're right that memes that are in image form or text that is in image form is much harder for censors to catch.
So a couple of the things that you work on at China Digital Times, directives from the Ministry of Truth. Another is the sensitive words list. Can you tell us a little bit about those and maybe give some examples of the kinds of things that you've been highlighting on the website?
Sure. I'll start with the sensitive words. So, for several years, since 2011, we have been collecting words that are at one point blocked from the search results on Weibo. So, we call these words sensitive because they're not necessarily blocked all the time. Some of these are blocked cyclically. So, for instance, around the time of June 4th every year, which is around the time of the crackdown on student protesters in Tiananmen in 1989, you'll have an incredible array of words that will get filtered from search results. We've even seen years where the word today is not searchable on June 3rd and 4th. And so we track these words and even combinations of words, so Boolean searches. And we also talk about why they're blocked because it's not necessarily clear. So, for example, there is this former Politburo Standing Committee member, Zhou Yongkang, who you've probably heard of. He's known right now for being the subject of a corruption investigation. And actually, he was suspected of being under investigation for about a year before the Chinese government made public that they were investigating him. So there were times when Zhou Yongkang's name was not searchable on Weibo, but people still wanted to talk about him. So they took one syllable from his first name, which is Kang, and gave him the nickname Kang Shifu, which means Master Kang. And Kang Shifu is also a famous brand of instant noodles in China. So instead, you would see people talking about what you thought were like instant beef noodles, but they were actually talking about this former Politburo Standing Committee member. And then, of course, there were times when even Master Kang, Kang Shifu, would again be a sensitive word. And it becomes a cat and mouse game because sometimes you'll even hear people talking about instant noodles. So you really, there's many layers of coding that go on that are developed as people continue to try to skirt censorship and discuss what's going on.
One of the things I find interesting about the Chinese web and the level of censorship there is it's often talked about as being this is something that Chinese people expect and want. And you often see a lot of polls that are done and surveys that show that Chinese people, at least in the polls, claim to feel that the internet does need to be managed by the government. And of course, that's, in some ways, that's a very Confucian and Asian sort of ideology that goes, way back. The idea of a paternalistic government, in some senses, taking care of everybody. But at the same time, you've got a front row seat to seeing how much resistance there is to this. And I'm just wondering what you think of all that.
Well, I will first say that, as far as I know, Confucius didn't really care what people posted on Weibo. That was one thing in the Analect that he never really touched on. But in all seriousness, I think that it's problematic to say that this is because of how China is culturally, especially because I think that's an argument that China's government will use frequently, that
Sure.
not necessarily about internet censorship, but oh, democracy is a Western, and we're not Western and we don't need that,
Right, the Asian values
but
debate goes back
socialism
a long way.
apparently, like Leninism and that is okay. So it becomes a bit of an argument about semantics. But to really get to the core of your question, I think that a lot of people get by with what they have on the internet in China, just like in any other country. I wouldn't say that the majority of people are necessarily that politically engaged, although I think that that apathy is perhaps greater and reinforced by the constricted environment in China. And people notice when things go offline because people will find that all of a sudden there's a certain image that they can't post, or there's Wikipedia pages that they no longer have access to, or stuff just disappears. There might be even a newspaper article that was posted to a legitimate news website like Phoenix, and it's there one day, and then the next day or 2 hours later, it's gone. So I think that it's probably tolerated at best. And it's hard to survey this kind of thing when people are living under that system because there's, I think, a certain stake at if you speak too truthfully. So it's really hard to tell how many people legitimately want this type of internet control. What I can say, having not done these types of social science surveys, but just from the everyday work that I do, is that there is a lot of playing around with these rules, trying to skirt these rules, and resistance. And I wouldn't say that it's necessarily overtly political all the time. And in fact, in another project that we have speaks perfectly to this. We have a wiki where we collect terms that are coined by netizens in order usually to skirt censorship, or that come into general parlance when they're talking about political or social phenomena. And we call this wiki the Grass Mud Horse Lexicon. Now, a grass mud horse is a magical creature who was invented in 2009. There was a push to control vulgarity online in China. And there was an announcement that came out in, like, I believe January of that year about this drive. And then about a month later, this video appeared about a grass mud horse and had these children singing about the grass mud horse that plays in the desert. Well, grass mud horse in Chinese is cao ni ma, which sounds fine, but with a change of tone, it becomes a very vulgar curse word. And so
Go ahead, we can say it. It means
we
fuck your
can say
mother.
it. It says it means it's yeah, and the Chinese is cao ni ma. So now I've taught everyone how to curse in Chinese. But the point is that it wasn't overtly political and that people were opposing the regime or even talking about really a social issue. They just want to be able to curse. There's resistance to these kinds of restrictions because most people want to be able to curse even just a little bit online. And so
Sure.
I think what you see from that kind of digital culture is that people aren't entirely satisfied with those controls because if they were, then the grass mud horse would not exist.
That's a good point. So this is a really fascinating area of study and a wonderful window into Chinese culture. And I'm sure the grass mud horse lexicon is a is a real interesting way to browse through so many of those homonyms and double entendres that they use. Could you give us some examples of your favorites that are on the site?
Another classic word, or rather turn of phrase, actually originated offline. I think this was in 2010. There was this playboy who had a fancy car and he was driving recklessly and I think intoxicated. And he hit this college student and killed her. And when he stopped his car, rather than saying, "Oh goodness, I'm so sorry, I can't believe," feeling ashamed of what had happened, he said something like, "Do you guys know who my father is? He's the local what's a blah, 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 blah. My father is Li Gang, and there's nothing you can do about it." And so this saying, "My dad is Li Gang, wo ba shi Li Gang," went viral online, and it became this sort of anthem for shrugging off all responsibility and having complete entitlement. So you would have
Which
people,
describes so many of the princelings in China.
yeah, but you had. So it started offline, then you had people online. Actually, there was a poetry contest online to work the phrase, "Wo ba si Li Gang," my dad is Li Gang, into classical style poetry. But you also had people offline, saying, "Oh, honey, will you do the dishes? My dad is Li Gang. I'm not doing the dishes." And you even saw road signs that said, "Please drive carefully. Your dad isn't Li Gang." So
Really?
it's an fascinating way the way there's permeable borders between the online and offline world.
Yeah.
And I think that's particularly interesting about that phrase.
Directives from the Ministry of Tooth, Truth, not the Ministry of Tooth.
That's a
Could you tell
different
us a little?
ministry.
It's a different ministry, very important about
They
dentistry.
care a lot about dental hygiene, yeah.
First of all, what's the origin of that name? Is probably going to be familiar to a lot of people who read George Orwell's 1984 in high school.
Yes, which includes me. And so the Ministry of Truth in that book, I believe it's the Propaganda and Censorship Bureau. And doesn't the main
Yep.
character, his job is to cut stuff out of news stories?
He works there, right?
And there's the doublespeak term for the ministry is mini true.
Yeah.
And so we have co-opted that term for a series of posts of leaked propaganda directives. So stuff that somehow gets out telling people at either news organizations or websites, with that border between the two being more and more porous, whether they should continue to report a story or stop reporting a story, or how that story should be reported, or where it should be placed on their website. All kinds of instructions about not as much what to and not to say, but how to say it.
The information that you get here is obviously very sensitive, and there are people who are leaking this information, which I'm sure could get a lot of people into a great deal of trouble. Is there a lot of other places online where this kind of information is available? Or I get the impression that China Digital Times is one of the few places where this information is visible.
For the most part, it really is us, especially to have it available in translation in English. But you'd be surprised. Sometimes stuff gets leaked on Baidu, which is the Chinese major search engine, rather than Google. And I have seen leaked directives on other sites. I believe it was Radio Free Asia a year or two ago had a series of directives that they published. But in terms of a sustained project, it's really been us, especially having them available bilingually and for our English readers, also providing context.
The mission of the site, just in, to back up and look at this in a little bigger picture, what are they trying to do? What's the main purpose of the site, other than, of course, making all of this information available and transparent to English speakers? What would be one of the main missions there?
Well, we say that our mission is to bring voices from China to the world. And what we mean by that are not just the voices that you hear from the official state media and from the government. There's plenty of coverage for that. We want people to hear from just everyday, ordinary people who are writing online. And we also care very much about showing what the online environment is like in China, and to the extent that we can, the media environment. And through these leaked directives and the collection of sensitive words, we're able to help sort of sketch that map so people can have an idea of what the circumstances are for ordinary netizens who offline are ordinary citizens. So, in all of our translations, we really value not necessarily the voices of the big Vs, those folks who have tens of thousands, if not millions, of followers on Weibo, although we do like them too. But we just want to get a variety of opinions and to show what people are up against and what they're saying, despite the restrictions that they're operating under.
I think that's really important, and one of the reasons I think it's really important is because there tends to be a very non-nuanced way of looking at China and China's internet, particularly with regard to censorship in the Western world. Everybody really wants to look at China and say, "Oh, China and the Chinese people are sheep, and the government is these bunch of evil-minded dictators." And I think it's really easy to get lured into that kind of a misunderstanding of the true complexity and level of nuance that really goes on in the Chinese web. And there's much more happening there, and there's many more interesting conversations going on, I think, than a lot of people want to give them credit for.
That's absolutely true. China, despite the tight restrictions that are there on the internet, it's still relatively freewheeling. I think, especially compared to other countries that I'm less familiar with, but that have much lower internet penetration rates. And China is very connected. I believe that it's approaching, well, there's certainly more than 500, well over 500 million internet users in China, which is, I
The
guess, a
biggest
little
in the
bit
world.
around, right. I mean, it's a little bit, I guess, over a third of the population, but it's still like that's much larger than the population of the United States, or the population of the EU. So we're talking about, if you're talking about that many people, you're not talking about 500 million sheep. You're talking about 500 million people. And each of those people have their own concerns and tastes and desires and personalities. And there's a real plurality of voices out there.
You spend a lot of time translating censorship directives and what could easily be seen as propaganda. I think it would sometimes be easy for someone with a job like yours to get a little down about what you see on China's internet. But given what we just talked about and what you do and what you see every day, I'm wondering how you feel and what inspires you about this.
There are days where I do feel very down on what's going on with the internet in China and the increasing restrictions on speech online in China. Especially this past year, as you mentioned, there's been a cooling on Weibo with last fall's crackdown on Weibo celebrities. And WeChat, which is a messaging service, a mobile messaging service that people are really turning to as they leave Weibo, has also been targeted by the censors. For example, a lot of public accounts where people will self-publish news and essays and blogs have also been shut down. But I'd say that two big things keep me going. One is that I do feel a real sense of mission, that it's important for us to document this censorship and also the resistance to that censorship and to share it with as many people as possible. And that's where the translation comes in, because by having it in English, it's available to anyone who speaks the world's lingua franca. And I would say that also, I just love the linguistic creativity that I see, especially the linguistic creativity, because for me, just learning all of these crazy curse words and turns of phrase and creative use of unusual characters on the internet in China, that I just really nerd out on that, I have to say. And I'd also like to say that, speaking of our grass mud horse lexicon, we are in the process of putting together an ebook for anyone who is interested in this Chinese internet language. No Chinese language skills necessary, and that book will be out in the beginning of September. So watch for that on our website.
Fantastic.
Our website URL is chinadigitaltimes.net. So that's one word, chinadigitaltimes.net. And you can follow us on Twitter at CDT. You can follow me, of course, on our website. And my Twitter handle is a mashup of Japanese and acronym. So it's Murasaki NT. That's spelled Murasaki NT.
And of course, I hope everyone will follow me as I track the impact of the digital revolution across Asia from China to India to Indonesia and everywhere in between. You can do that at facebook.com/AsiaDigitalLife. If you're a Google Plus user, just dial up google.com/+AsiaDigitalLife. I'm also tweeting about all of this and more on Twitter at P. Sharbaugh. That's PSHARBAUGH. And for now, the best place to listen to these podcasts is via my SoundCloud stream at soundcloud.com/AsiaDigitalLife. Thanks again, Anne. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And keep it tuned. We'll be back soon.